Hey, good to see you guys today. I'm Chuck, if I haven't met you before, and we are in week three of a series. We tend to talk about the same thing for 4 or 5 weeks in a row, and this one is great because it's all about conversations, particularly conversations about Jesus. So what does it look like on a back deck, at a cube, you know, at lunch, hanging out in relationship to share about who Jesus is? Or if you're on the receiving end, how do you engage in that? How does it look to receive that conversation? So that's what we're talking about in this series. In the last couple weeks, we've really been trying to debunk a couple of words that probably get associated with religiosity, and actually they're in the Bible, but they transcend the Bible. First is the word gospel, or good news. I mean, the word gospel means the good news, and in the Bible, it's absolutely talking about the good news of Jesus. But in that time, there were a lot of people who heralded the gospel, be it the gospel of Caesar or the gospel of whatever was going on at the time, and that just simply means good news. And the people who heralded that news were called evangelists. They were the bringers of good news. And, you know, for us, in our context, when we hear that word evangelist, we might think of, as Brian said, you might think of a person with a bad haircut and a cheap suit. And that's not the only picture of evangelism or what it means to share the good news. And so we're talking about, how does that look in the context of relationships? And particularly today, how do we either share or receive that conversation with a bold authenticity? That's where we're going today. Let's pray. God, I'm asking that you would further the conversation that you started thousands and thousands of years ago when you created us. God, you created us to know you. And from the very beginning of creation, you've been communicating. And I pray, God, that as we talk about how that communication shows up in human relationships, on a back deck, hanging out at a picnic, being with friends and family, God, that we would understand your heart for us. We'd understand what it is you want to say to us. And we would respond. Wherever we are, we would respond. In Jesus' name, amen. You know, I realized that what Brian said a couple weeks ago is true. We're all evangelists for something. We're all evangelists for something that's impacted our lives. I noticed this yesterday. I was hanging out with a couple. They're friends of ours, and I was at their house, and the wife was talking about plans that she had for the afternoon and how, for her, she has to keep everything kind of organized, all her information in a journal, and all of her plans and all her details are in that. And it's just interesting how I just jumped into evangelism mode, because I journal myself, but I've stopped using my journal for like information capture, because there's an incredible app that I am an evangelist for called Evernote. Anybody use Evernote on your iPhone, iPad, smartphone? Amen for Evernote. I am like, God created Evernote. So anyway, I love this app. And one of the things I love about it is, I have to admit, I'm a little bit of an anal retentive person, my wife would say, when it comes to productivity and time management. You know, you might call it anal retentive. I call it being responsible. It's just what I call it. And so for me, anybody who shares that same characteristic knows you need basic three things. You know, you need a way to capture your time. You need a calendar management system. You need a task management system. And then you need an information capture and retrieval system. You need kind of those three basic things to be productive. And so for me, Evernote is my new information retrieval and information input system. So I do everything on Evernote. So I'm at their house, and I'm pulling out my phone, and I'm like, here's the reason why Evernote's better than your journal. Because listen, when you put in your journal, if you lose your journal, it's gone. But listen, watch this. If I put a note in Evernote, when I hit save, it's instantly accessible in another thing God created, which is called the cloud. God created the cloud. Just want you to know, it's in the Bible. It's in the Bible. God created the cloud. And Evernote puts stuff in the cloud. So as soon as I save it on my phone, I can pull it up on your phone. I can pull it up on any computer. And so I'm sitting there evangelizing Evernote. And it just reminded me, we're evangelists for something. And usually it just flows out in the course of conversation. I didn't have a 4-point sales pitch that I was giving her. It was just me describing how Evernote was helpful to me and how it might be helpful to her. And that's the picture of sharing the good news or being an evangelist for Jesus that we see throughout the scriptures. Here's one example. It says this in John chapter 1. Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who heard what John had said and who had followed Jesus. So Andrew was one of the very first people to follow Jesus. And the first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon and tell him, we have found the Messiah, that is the Christ. And he brought him to Jesus. Andrew has a legitimate and authentic encounter with Jesus. And that authentic encounter just boldly comes out of him in the context of his closest relationships. He actually shared a fishing business with his brother Peter. And because he had found the long-awaited Messiah, see, in the Jewish culture, they were waiting for God to send a rescuer. All the prophecies pointed to this. They were expecting this person to come. And when Andrew encountered Jesus and realized he was the Messiah, it just naturally flowed out of him to say, I got to show you, Peter, who I found. I found the rescuer. I found the Messiah. And this is what it looks like when we're sharing in a backyard kind of context. And so that's what we've been talking about in this series. And today it's about how do you continue to give and receive on both sides of that with a bold authenticity. Speaking of bold authenticity, Kirk Perry last week, in my opinion, knocked it out of the park. Knocked it out of the park. You were here last week just to hear him. It was great. Kirk is the president at P&G, and he said a lot of things that stuck with me, but one inspired me. It really inspired me to go in the direction I'm going today. He said, my work is what I do. My job is what I do. He said, but my faith is who I am. And if I can't share my faith at work, then maybe that's not the right place for me to be. Because that's a part of him bringing the fullness of who he is. And I thought about that as a guy in a pretty prominent position in the marketplace. That's a bold thing to say. That's just a bold thing to say. But I also know, because I've interacted with Kirk, that's also an authentic thing for him to say. That's who he is. And so Kirk reminds me that, you know, the power of interacting in this conversation is really the power to be boldly authentic, either in your questioning or in your sharing. You know, in the Bible, I see a lot of examples of this. Romans chapter 1, one guy who's sharing his faith with people through a letter says, for I am not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes. He's saying, I'm not ashamed to talk about what Jesus means to my life, because when I found Jesus, I didn't just find some helpful principles that make life work. I found the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes. Now, we all may not believe that, and I mean, that's the great thing about being in a community like Crossroads. We don't all have to believe that, but here's the thing. If you do believe that, or if you did believe that, you can imagine there would be a level of bold authenticity with which you'd share that, not because you're trying to beat people over the head, but because you found the power of God. You've encountered God, and you would want to share that with people because it's impacted you deeply. Now, here's the problem. The problem for us is we have real barriers to being boldly authentic on either side of this conversation. And part of it is we all inherently know there is a such thing as being too bold, right? We all know that. You can be too bold. And in fact, some of us, we stand so far back from sharing what Jesus means. Or when people come to us with the Jesus thing, we just want to step away and not engage in the conversation because we've encountered someone over the course of our life who is what I would call a Bible thumper. And they just beat you over the head with it. And it was just, you know, they wore it on their sleeve all the time. And everything was about that. And they were a little bit too bold. And you can be a little bit too bold. You can be a little bit too bold in a lot of ways. So we're going to take up an offering right now. And as we do that, we're going to watch a video of someone who really illustrates to me what it looks like to be a little bit too bold. So we're generous around here because God's been generous to us. And so if you call this place home, if you're connected to the vision and mission of what God's called this community to, you give financially to help fuel the life change we get to be a part of and we get to experience. But if you're brand new, I want you to know we are not about your money. We are excited and we are about you. We're about you being in a place where you can hear the message of Jesus in language you can understand. We're excited about you being in a place where you're challenged to think about what it would look like to follow him. But right now, as these discs come down with our volunteers, you can let them pass you right on by because we're not about your money. We are about you. But we are going to watch a video. I found funny because it reminds me that when you're a little bit too bold in the YouTube generation, oftentimes you end up as an embarrassing news story. So let's take a look at this.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Star County Republican Party Executive Committee, good evening. And thank you not only for your attendance, but for allowing me the opportunity to speak. My name is Phil Davison, and I am seeking our party's nomination for the position of Star County Treasurer. In terms of education, I have a bachelor's degree in sociology, a bachelor's degree in history, a master's degree in public administration, and a master's degree in communication. I have been a Republican in times good, and I have been a Republican in times bad. We're tired of business as usual. Drastic times require what? Drastic measures, yes! Who said that? Thank you! Drastic times require drastic measures!
Well, that was Phil Davison, running for treasurer of Stark County, Ohio. Amazingly, he didn't get the seat, but he did get a whole lot of attention, including ours. And he is my guest live right now. Phil? I don't know what to say.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. You know, I know it's a little stunning, leaves people a little speechless. I know it's different, I guess.
Well, speechless.
It's radical.
Now.
Yeah, it's radical, and that's what I am, and that's who I am. And I, as I look back, I'm like, you know what? I'm raw and I'm real and I'm rugged, and that's who I am. Take it or leave it.
You're raw, real, and rugged, and Republican, and not elected.
Oh man. I have to admit, it's one of those clips that when I get to heaven, I wonder if God's going to be like, did you really have to put Phil Davison up there like that? I don't know. So, hey, you know what? No political statement. It's just a statement around his boldness. You know what? Two things that are very clear, I think we can all agree. In the history of our great democracy, no one has gone after the position of county treasurer of Stark County with more passion than Phil Davison, right? I mean, we all, absolutely, absolutely. Now, the other thing is, if appropriate boldness in that situation is a 7, can we just agree Phil's a little bit above a 7? Just a little bit above a 7. And I share that because he's a normal guy. I'm sure he's a normal guy. And as you interact with him, even on the video and the news story, I mean, he's just a passionate guy. But the thing is, you can be too bold. And I think for a lot of us, one of the reasons why we stand back from conversations about Jesus is because we don't want to come anywhere close to that. Or maybe we've been approached like that, and that's why we turn the other way when people want to talk about Jesus. And what I would say is this, you're absolutely right if you have a concern about being a little bit too bold. You're absolutely right. But there's another end of the spectrum as well. The other end of the spectrum is we are so afraid to engage, or we become even apathetic about engaging with the power of God. If Jesus is the power of God and you believe that, you can come to a place where you're so apathetic, and I don't think that's a great place for us to be either. And I think the beautiful thing is what I see in the scripture is a bold authenticity that seems to leverage boldness, not to an inappropriate level, but is also authentic and real enough to be relatable to people. And I see that on both sides. I see people who are bold and authentic in their pursuit of understanding Jesus and people who are bold and authentic in sharing it. One of the videos that we used in the earlier weeks of the series was Penn of Penn and Teller, self-proclaimed atheist, not interested in changing that position. And he talked about an interaction he had with a boldly authentic follower of Jesus. And he talked about how, you know, I still don't believe any of this stuff, but this was a good guy. As this guy approached him, not too over the top, but clearly bold enough to say, hey, I believe some things and I want you to know who Jesus is. Penn said to himself, he said, you know, if you actually believe that the Bible is true, and you actually believe that there is an eternal destiny at stake for people, whether or not they line up with Jesus, how much do you have to hate a person to not share that with them? And I couldn't put that any better. I'm challenged by that to leverage and lean into bold authenticity. Because that's, again, what we see in the Bible. One place where we see this is in 1 Thessalonians 2, where it says, because we loved you so much, we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. I mean, that's the balance of the boldness to share the gospel, to share the good news, but also the authenticity to share my life. And that beautiful blend and beautiful balance has always been what's taken me to the next level of faith. I've seen that model from a lot of people in my life who've helped me grow in my relationship with Jesus or introduced me to a relationship with Jesus. And one of them is my friend Omar. I met Omar in high school, and we're still friends to this day. And Omar is boldly authentic. And he always was. When we were 15, he was not a normal 15-year-old guy. He wasn't normal in some ways. He was normal in some ways, not normal in others. And the things that were not normal about him were incredibly attractive. Because at 15, I went to church all the time, and I followed Jesus, and I loved God. So I didn't have any problem with the G word at all in school. I'd talk about the G word. I'd talk about the G word wherever I was. Just that at 15, the G word most prevalent on my mind was girls. Probably normal. And you know, Omar too, and so we talk about that. But Omar had an expansive vocabulary beyond my G word, and he would talk about things like purpose and destiny. And what does it mean to leave a legacy? What does it really look like to follow Jesus in a way that impacts your generation? And he would use this language, and it wasn't like he was trying to, you know, pontificate on crazy things. It was just who he was. He was authentically this way. And that was attractive to me. Because as I interacted with him, I remember spending hours with him and his dad and a friend of mine. We'd just hang out in his living room and talk about God and just, you know, encourage each other in that direction. Man, Omar called me to more. That's what he did for me. He called me to more because he was willing to be bold and authentic in his relationship with Jesus. He called me to more in a relationship with Jesus. He called me to more in my life than I would have even aspired to had it not been for my friendship with him. And I just realized the power of a bold and authentic representation of what it looks like to follow Jesus, or a bold and authentic pursuit of understanding what that means. And there's common traits with all of those. Three I want to talk about. And I'm not laying this out as this is not a strategy for winning your friend. That's not what this is about. These are byproducts of a life where people have had a genuine encounter with Jesus or are genuinely interested in understanding who he is. This is just what you see in the life of boldly authentic people, and I've tried to be this way. And the first is boldly authentic people give access. Boldly authentic people give access to their life. Brian talked about the decking of America, and the fact is, you know, maybe not a lot of us, but some of us have really sweet decks. Like, this, isn't this incredible? Like, I was thinking after last service of putting some burgers and brats on there if you want to come back for that. But I think it'd be a fire hazard, so I don't know if I can. But, you know, I mean, just because we've got these back decks, because we have our garages now, you can go a whole week without speaking to your neighbors. You can go a whole week and not even say hello to the person that lives next door to you because of the decking of America. And one of the things that Maria and I have tried to be very intentional about is not falling prey to that in our neighborhood. And so we make it a habit of walking our neighborhood. Several times a week, we just walk it. And we're not walking it because, again, we're trying to find the next person that we can share Jesus with. That's not what it's about. We like the neighborhood. We like the people in our neighborhood. We want to know them. We want to be in relationship and community together. It's good exercise. And so we walk our neighborhood. And what I've found is, as we walk the neighborhood, we meet people, and the way that those relationships go to the next level is always around giving or receiving a little bit more access into each other's lives. So how this has played out for us is, as we meet neighbors, there's a couple of them that have kids the same age as ours, and we'll invite them to the birthday parties, and it becomes kind of this, you know, annual thing where we're going to connect with that family in a social way at a birthday party, and it just strengthens friendships. In fact, one family that's been like, they're like three birthday parties in with us now. We're having a great time, and we are really growing close to this family. They're a Jewish family, and they have given us access to their lives. And so we've celebrated Hanukkah with them. And actually this year, I had an incredible experience at their synagogue of celebrating Purim. And, you know, I try to understand Jewish culture. Obviously, the Bible is birthed out of that. Jesus was born in a Jewish culture. So I try to understand that. But what I didn't understand was that Purim is basically the Jewish expression of Halloween. And it's really fun. I mean, there's like candy. There's all kinds of stuff. And I'll just, you know, personal confession for me, call it my own closed-mindedness, my own limited experience and exposure. But it kind of freaked me out to see my Jewish neighbor dressed as Count Dracula in the synagogue. That was really... And then I was like, I like this. This is great. And so, and I just see this give and take of access being a critical way that lays a foundation for a relationship, lays a foundation for sharing the good news. And again, it's not a strategy, but just naturally flows out as you're building friendships. You know, at work, this could look like doing something very different tomorrow. A lot of you are in work environments or in environments where you see the same people from week to week. I guarantee you, for the millionth time tomorrow when you show up, you're going to get the question, how was your weekend, right? Everybody asks, how was your weekend? To which we typically answer what? Fine. It was good, it was fine, it was great. You know, we kind of give these one-word answers. Maybe access looks like for one person in your office, one person in your environment, you give them a little bit more. You give them a little bit more of what it was this weekend that really impacted you, or, you know, what you experienced this weekend. It could be basic things. I used to do this when I worked at Procter. I would... You know, a lot of times the highlight of my weekend was coming to Crossroads or being about something that we were doing as a community, be it Go Cincinnati. We were going out and doing service projects with thousands of people across the city, or maybe it was checking out Awaited, or, you know, whatever it was, Super Bowl service, the first time I saw that. You know, it's like those are the things that were highlights. And I just said, you know what, this is who I am. So not because I'm trying to, like, have a strategy, but because it's authentically who I am. When people would ask me how my weekend was, a lot of times I'd mention that. And it just opens up access to, hey, this is a part of my life. And it was received, and it was good. And you can have these opportunities for access. But again, these work both ways. I'm talking right now about how to share from a place of giving access. What does it look like to give access if you're interested in pursuing that relationship with God? I saw this played out with my 20-year-old niece, Jasmine, who spent the last month with us. We went back to Pennsylvania a couple weeks ago, and Jasmine, of her own volition, said, hey, I want to come and spend some time with you guys and the kids. And so when she said that, I'm like, that's awesome. Can we say date night? That is awesome. She's 20 years old. Awesome. So I knew that was good, but I also realized she's going to get what I like to call the full access pass to the Mingo family experience. You know, she's going to see it all. She's going to see the good. She's going to see the bad. She's going to see everything in between. And she absolutely did. You know, we've got two young kids. And so if nothing else over the last month, hopefully she saw enough of the interesting challenges we face with young children to keep her from having irresponsible sex so she won't have a child out of wedlock for at least one more year. So as an uncle, I'm actually very satisfied with that outcome. I'll just be honest. So, you know, that for sure happened, but she also saw other things. You know, we went to something called family camp, and it's when we get with some other families, and it's a spiritual environment. It's an environment where there's prayer, and there's a lot of things that would be seen in the Bible. And Jasmine would say she believes in God. She certainly wouldn't say she's a follower of Jesus or even buys in to all of what the Bible has to say about that, but she was willing to make herself accessible to the life we live. One of the things that we do as a family is on our Sabbath day, when we have our day when I'm off and everybody's off and we're trying to be together as a family, we really try to incorporate some conversation around God into that. So I've got a little book that I bought, Special Times with God, and it's for families with young kids, and it just has a simple concept every week that we go through. And so this week, when she was here, last week, the concept was how God created everything. And we're talking about the creation story, and you know, it's like, how do I apply this for a 3.5-year-old? So I said to my son, I said, all right, what we're going to do is this week, as we go through the week, every night at dinner, let's just talk about things we saw or encountered that God created. And so we were doing that, and it was amazing because that was a week we went to the zoo, and they actually got some free tickets for the butterfly show, went to the butterfly show, and it was just awesome to come back and process that. But what was so cool was not only was my 3.5-year-old processing, but this 20-year-old young woman was processing it too. And so one of the things she discovered was a robin's nest on the tree in front of our house. And so she's like, you know, that night she's telling us about that and how God created that. And it was really cool to see her open herself up. I took her to Target World. She shot guns for the first time. She loved that. She loved that. We were, little aside, it's a 10 o'clock special. So, you know, we're shooting the 22 because I'm like starting her off easy. Guy next to us had a Glock 40 and he said, hey, would you guys like to empty a magazine, a piece of that? Yeah, we would. We love that. So that was awesome. That was like a highlight. She put that on Facebook. All of her friends were jealous. It was incredible. So, you know, but I when she was leaving, I told her, I said, Jasmine, I'm actually very impressed with you. Oh, I forgot to tell you this too. She came to Crossroads and talk about two very interesting services. She was here when Kirk talked about sharing his faith at work. And she was also here for the week when we all did confessions in this space. Talk about an interesting service to come to when you don't come to church often. So, but she loved it. She engaged. And I told her, I said, I'm really impressed with that. You gave us access to your life. And you chose to immerse yourself in our life. And I just applaud you for that. And I told her, I said, you know, we're not perfect. And you've seen that. She saw us fight. She saw all the stuff that happens in a normal house. I said, but we're going in the direction of Jesus because we really believe he has a heart for us. And he has a heart for you. And I'm just excited that you gave us a month to just show you what that would look like in a family context. And so I saw her giving us access, and it goes both ways. And this is what people do. If you want to get to a place of being boldly authentic, you give access to your life. So my question for you on this is, who can you give access to? Who is it in your life that you can give access to? Maybe that looks like giving them access and inviting them into your life. Maybe it looks like seeking access into their life and saying, hey, I need to carve out time to understand what it is you believe and understand about Jesus. Whatever that is, who can you give access to? Because boldly authentic people give access. Boldly authentic people also get vulnerable. At some point, they go beneath the veneer and they get vulnerable. I've interacted with a lot of people about things of faith, questions, doubts. And if I were to think about the doubts that I hear from people, the barriers to them saying yes to following Jesus, to believe in that he is the Son of God, and all the stuff that goes with that, it really falls into two camps. There are absolutely head questions, intellectual barriers that people have. Intellectual questions like, how do you actually believe that an ancient book was God-inspired in some way and should direct my life? Like, how do you believe that? What about all the other ways of faith that people have? How do you settle on there's only one way? I mean, those are very real questions that you have to engage in. And so people have those questions. But then people also have what I would say are heart questions. And those heart questions are different. Those are the questions about the things in my life that even I'm personally ashamed of. And you're telling me God can forgive that? I don't know if I can believe that. Or the things of, you know what, I lost someone dear to me when I was young, and I have a hard time believing God loves me and is in control when this was an out-of-control experience I had in my life. Those are heart questions, and one of the heart questions people have is, don't I have to have my whole life buttoned up before I actually say yes to this thing? And what I realize is that particular question, the only way to debunk it, the only way to break down that barrier, is people need to spend time with followers of Jesus who love Jesus but don't have their lives buttoned up and are willing to be open about that. And when people see or sense that kind of vulnerability, they lean in and they'll trust. They'll just trust at a different level. I saw this when I was in college. I remember having a Bible study, and one of the great and easy ways to get guys to come to a Bible study is have a lot of attractive girls that are also at the Bible study. That just, some of you are at Crossroads right now for that very reason. I mean, it still works. You know, it works when you're an adult. So, that was a little joke. So, you know, I mean, the reality is some of them were there for maybe other motives besides I really want to understand who God is. But I remember following up with a couple of them after a conversation. It was, you know, we thought like a 30-minute conversation we were going to have. But in the midst of that, I just got vulnerable about, at that time, it was a very real and honest struggle with internet pornography for me. And I remember mentioning that to these guys, took that 30-minute conversation and turned it to a 3-hour conversation. And it turned it into additional conversations as we were able to just go to a different level of authenticity and get real with each other. You know, it's like when you were a kid. It's amazing how we forget these things, and we know a lot of this when we're kids. Remember when you were a kid, you couldn't wait to share your scars with your friends? Do you remember that? You couldn't wait. You know, if I didn't show my bruise to Danny and Tyrone, it wasn't real. But, you know, when they saw it, it was like, it validates. Yes, I have a wound. But when we get older, we just kind of learn how to put on a great show and put on a great display that would cause other people to think, well, you kind of have it all together. You seem to be the answer guy. And I think followers of Jesus can be the worst at that, because we can have these great pithy answers that really are not helpful. And we can throw them out, just throw them out all the time. And it causes people to feel like, well, you don't struggle. You can't relate to me. But man, when you give them a window into your doubt, when you give them a window into your very struggles, it just creates this platform for bold authenticity to kind of flourish. But like I said, these go both ways. And so for vulnerability, if you're on the other side of that, if you're on the receiving end and you're trying to figure out who Jesus is, maybe what vulnerability looks like for you is instead of just engaging in the head questions, which are easier to engage in, it's easy to debate. It's easy to talk about that stuff. It's easy to say, well, what about this? What about that? And I'm not saying don't do that at all, but at some point, you got to realize following Jesus is not a head thing. It's not a head thing only. It's a heart thing. And at some point, maybe what getting vulnerable looks like for you is you start asking heart questions. And you walk with somebody through, how would I actually believe that God is good when I've seen the kind of loss and pain in my life that I've experienced? Man, I don't know where that journey is going to take you, but it takes vulnerability to even ask that question. And it can take you to an amazing place. Whatever that is, it's asking those heart questions. So the question for all of us on this is, who can you be vulnerable with? Who can you be vulnerable with? Who is it that you can open up to? Give them a little bit more of a crack into your life. And it's not only sharing your scars. I mean, you know, I don't want to leave you on that. Sometimes it's sharing your muscles. Kids do that too. Feel my muscle. You know, it's like sometimes you've had an opportunity to develop incredible strength in areas of life through your relationship with God. And sometimes that's what you need to put on display for people. But that takes vulnerability to say, you know what, my wife and I, we've learned some things about marriage from following Jesus that have helped our marriage improve tremendously. Can I talk to you about that? You know, maybe it's asking that question, hey, have you ever thought there may be a spiritual side? I've learned some things in the midst of this. I mean, we have to be willing to be vulnerable, to share the power of God that has been at work in our lives. So who's that for you? Think about that. Who can you get vulnerable to? But even access and vulnerability fall short of living up to what we saw in 1 Thessalonians, where it said we were delighted not only to share our lives with you, and I'm reversing the order on purpose, not only share our lives with you, but to share the gospel as well. At some point, you give or you accept the challenge. At some point, you can live boldly authentic, you can be who you are, you can be accessible, you can be vulnerable, but at some point, and you know those moments, it's time to give a challenge or it's time to receive the challenge that's been given to you. This is where Omar significantly changed my life. There are things that are part of me today that I trace back to a specific challenge Omar gave me. We have been friends a long time and got out of college together, actually started a business together, speaking to kids about purpose. Go figure, right? You know, we started this business together, and I was working at P&G, so I was kind of part-time in the business, full-time at P&G, and I got an opportunity to move to Cincinnati. And when I moved to Cincinnati, one of the things that Omar had been challenging me, probably in a more softer level about, he really ramped up the challenge as I was leaving town. It was around being very intentional about journaling, being very intentional about my prayer life with God, journaling that life, journaling from my own understanding of what God was doing in my life. And, you know, when we were younger even, when he was a teenager, he would talk about all the great men that journaled and how important that principle, that rhythm was in his life. And I would, you know, I'd give lip service to it. Yeah, I'm going to do that. But when I was leaving Cincinnati, Omar, in a small gesture that changed my life, gave me my first journal. He gave me this very journal. And as much as that was a challenge to actually use this gift, it's what he wrote in the first page of this journal that changed the direction of my relationship with God and how I actually live my life right now. And I want to share this with you because I want you to know you never know the power of one simple action of challenge. You never know the power that can have in someone's life. That last question that you're hesitant to ask because you don't know if it's stepping over the line, but you feel prompted to ask it, when you ask it, it could change someone's life. And when you receive that kind of challenge, it can change your life. That's what Omar did for me. This is what he wrote. Dear Chuck, he wrote this 12 years ago. Dear Chuck, the quality of this journal accentuates the quality of life that you are expected to live. I pray that you enrich others with the seed that God has deposited in you. Now the journal is present because every great man records the path of his destiny. Please do so. Others will need to know the pain, the heart, the mind, and the glory of the servant leader. Go forth in a spirit of excellence and watch how God uses you to bring his purposes to pass for your generation. I pray that before you die, you will serve your generation. Your eternal friend of destiny, Omar. P.S. We will meet again. And those words landed in a soft place in my heart because Omar had given me access to his life and he was vulnerable with his life. And so when he gave me that challenge, I received it at a deep level. And here, I think about these words because it's amazing. When I left Philly in 2000, I thought I'd be in Cincinnati for a couple years and I would move on back to the East Coast and continue on with my career. I had no idea. That 7 years from that point, I was going to leave P&G, come on staff at a church, and answer a call to ministry. I had no idea what life was going to bring to me, but you know what? As I read his challenge 12 years ago, I think Omar did. I think he saw something in me that I didn't even see in myself, and because he was willing to challenge me to more, changed the direction of my life. In fact, he impacted me so much that for the first 5 years, this is the only journal I would buy. I wouldn't even buy a different style journal. I would go, they used to sell this at Barnes & Noble, they still do, and I would go in, and if they were out of this journal, I'd say, no, you don't understand. You need to order me the brown one. I don't want the black one. They have a bigger one. We have one with more space. I don't want the bigger one. It's got to be this. It's got to have the gold leaf on the side of the page. This is the journal I need. He impacted me so much that not only did I want a journal like him, I wanted the journal in the journal he used for 5 years. All because he was willing to challenge a friend. All because he was willing to call me to more, to something that I didn't even know I wanted. Omar is a great example of what it looks like to give a challenge in the context of a relationship to invite people to know more of who Jesus is. But there's also, around Crossroads, beautiful examples of people who have received that challenge with the same level of bold authenticity. People like this woman right here.
I was going to a pretty remote place, and I was flying to Philadelphia and from Philadelphia to another location. And I get off the plane, and while I get off the plane, I just orientate real quick, and somebody comes up to me, he's like, you look lost, where are you heading? And I didn't feel like I was lost, but I told him, well, I'm going so-and-so, and he's like, okay, follow me, no problem. It took me off guard. I was just not expecting that at that moment, and he pretty much I followed him, and in that 10 minutes we were walking to the next gate, I very fast knew that this person has something I did not have. You didn't talk about very shallow things. It was a very deep conversation at that moment. And when we're departing, I was thinking to myself, I was like, what just happened here? I ran into the same person again after my photo shoot. Again, it was a very remote place. The chances of meeting or running into somebody were really remote. And from that moment on, we were like, okay, cool, we live in the same city. Let's hang out. So we had lunch after that. And I wanted to know what made him tick, because I did not know what it was at that point. I did not know that he is a believer of any sort. God never came up at that conversation, but it was almost like God was shining through his eyes. It was just a beautiful situation. And I asked him a lot of questions. I was so intrigued by him, because I just wanted to know what made him tick. I wanted to know where he gets that knowledge, where he gets that calmness, and, you know, just being such a very, very cool person. And he quickly mentioned, oh yeah, I go to Crossroads, and he never asked me to go with him, and he never pushed God on me, but I pretty much self-invited myself. I asked him, I was like, is it okay if I come with you? Can I come with you? And he's like, sure, tag along, no problem. And I was so thankful for that. I sat down, my friend right next to me, and I don't even know, it took me maybe 5 minutes, and in those 5 minutes, every emotion, it just completely entered my brain, my heart, my soul, and I just fell apart. I felt as if all this human crap I was carrying around with me for so many decades, It was like, it was so heavy on me. The tears were rolling, and I just feel this internal peace, and I feel as if God is telling me, hey, let me fix you. Just I will take your backpack. I will take your bag of crap, and I will fix you. And I felt all of a sudden, I was so at peace, and I knew what my friend had, he was not fighting. And I was a fighter for my whole life. I was always fighting. It's like, quit fighting. God telling me, quit fighting. I knew right there and then, this is great, but this is a cookie crumb. I knew I was starved. I wanted to have a whole buffet, and I knew I had to tap into people. I knew I needed support, and I had great people in my life already, but the thing is, I knew some of them were believers, but I never tapped into that. They just took me under their wing, and gosh, they helped so much. When my friends came into my life in that particular way, my faith just grew rapidly. I knew I had to make changes. It was very apparent, and I couldn't go down the same way as I was going down. I was like, God, I don't know what's going on here. I have no idea what your plan is for me, but I tell you what, you can have me. You can have me. I don't know what you want to do with me, but just take me. After that, life changed. Life changed. You know, it changed so much. And again, I wish I could tell you verbally what my heart feels, because sometimes you can just not do that. It's just impossible, because you finally read things, not with your eyes, you read them with your heart, and you understand life, and you understand why people act the way they are. And you just want to be a better person, and you want to help others. I wanted to be like my friend. I wanted that God shines through me. I wanted to be exactly like him. I knew I wanted to change people's lives, and I wanted to spread the message. And I wanted to tell them what makes me happy now.
Her name is Teen Hoffman, and I just think Teen is a perfect example of a boldly authentic pursuit. I mean, she She interacts with this guy randomly in an airport, and she sees something in him that she doesn't have. And instead of stopping at that, she pursues the opportunity to say, "What is it about you?" And the guy's answer was basically, "I found bread. I found life. I found in Jesus what I couldn't find." And, you know, there's a million reasons to not engage. There's a million reasons when someone kind of opens up and starts to talk about Jesus. If you're on the other side of that conversation, you have a million reasons to say, "I don't really want to go there." I'm going to give you one reason to pursue. And it's what Team puts really well. Because at the end of the day, this isn't about a strategy. This is about encountering a God who wants to satisfy your deepest hunger. And so the question I would have is, are you hungry for a life that is different than what you found? Because if you are, then I'm telling you, what Teen would tell you is, "I found bread. I found life." She found, through this bold and authentic pursuit of Jesus, a life that doesn't come any other way. See, here's the thing. Jesus is God's way of initiating the conversation with you. The Bible says that the Word became flesh, talking about Jesus as God's Word. It says the Word became flesh, and one translation said, and he moved into our neighborhood. Why did he do that? He moved into our neighborhood in the same way that you would have a back deck conversation, so he could show us that there is a hunger that can be satisfied by God. Jesus says in the Bible that he's the bread of life. He's the sustenance of life. He's the way that we live a fullness in our life. He's the bread of life. Jesus says that he is the living water, and that he can quench our deepest thirst. And let me just tell you, that is good news, but it's only good news if you're hungry. It's only good news if you're thirsty. But if you are hungry, and if you are thirsty, then what I want you to know, what people who are on a back deck in a cube, who are willing to get open and vulnerable about their life and talk to you about Jesus, what we want you to know is not that we found a great set of beliefs. We want you to know we found bread. We found life. We found God. Jesus gives this bold challenge to all who are hungry when he says, "If anyone is thirsty, let him come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as the scriptures have said, streams of living water will flow from within him." And Jesus is issuing a bold challenge here, and he's saying, if you're thirsty for that kind of life, if you're hungry for that kind of life, and you found that materialism doesn't get it for you, you found that you can make a whole lot of money and still not have it. You found that you can have a lot of sexual partners and still not feel affirmed and fulfilled in the way that you want to. You found that even when you try to do really good things and try to be a disciplined person, there's a hole in your life. If you're thirsty, if you're hungry, come to me, Jesus says. It's the simple challenge of initiating and continuing a conversation. The question for all of us is, will you respond? Will you respond to this bold and authentic invitation to know God, to know who Jesus is? Teen talked about the fact that she knew she was hungry and there was a cookie crumb, but she said, "I want the whole buffet. I want you to know Jesus is spreading out the whole buffet." And sometimes the way that buffet gets introduced is you're at work and somebody shares with you about how God has impacted their life. Sometimes the way you get introduced to that buffet is you're at a family reunion, you're at a family connection, there's somebody in your family that used to be one way, and you just can look at them and tell they are different. And when you get a chance to talk to them, they start talking about Jesus. They start talking about what they're learning and how they're growing, how they feel forgiven for deep, deep things they never thought they could feel forgiven of. However it starts, that's the beginning of God reaching out to you. And the question is, will you respond and continue the conversation with him? If you would, I want you to close your eyes right now, because I truly believe God is a communicator. And what I'm praying happens in just these few minutes is that God begins to show you what your next step might be to respond. You know, maybe your next step is giving access. Maybe it's carving out time and space in your life to actually spend time with someone who follows Jesus. Understand why they live the way they do. And if that's your next step, then maybe right now God will give you a picture of a person or give you the name of a person that you can just follow up with and say, "Hey, we need to spend some time together." A person may have invited you here today. They might be right next to you. Maybe it's giving access. Or maybe you know who that person is, but the truth is, you've been engaging with them about head questions. very important to do. But you know you've got some heart questions. And it may have been times when you've been hanging out with them and the words to actually ask that question have been forming on your lips, but you've stuffed it because you're not sure if you can go there yet. Maybe the next step for you is you go ahead and ask the heart question, the question that really at the end of the day is the biggest barrier to you responding to God's invitation through Jesus. See, the amazing thing is we're all at different places. We all have these conversations in different places. We have them at different levels with different relationships. But in and through all of them, there's a God who's inviting us all to more. He's inviting us to know him. And hey, one of the things I would say is maybe for you, you can't identify a person, but you can absolutely identify a question. If that's the case, you can open your eyes. I want you to know next week as we wrap up this series, we're going to be spending the whole weekend answering questions. Brian's going to be answering questions that you send. So I want you this week to email your questions to questions@crossroads.net. Your questions about God, your questions about Jesus, your questions about faith. And what we're going to do is, while we won't be able to answer every question, we're going to look at every question and make sure the ones we answer are most representative of where people are and what they're asking. So I want to encourage you to send your question in. And you know, maybe for you, the question is, how do I connect with someone in this community to have one of those backyard conversations? If that's the case, then when you email questions@crossroads.net, let us know that that's what you're interested in and give us a way to get in touch with you, an email, a phone number, and we're going to try to connect you with someone who at least can begin to dialogue with you about what it means to follow Jesus. And one final thing before we leave, I want you to know that in your bold pursuit of following Jesus, you don't have to wait for some officially sanctioned thing to mark the moment when you say, I receive it and I want to follow Jesus for the rest of my life. You can do that right now. Today could be your day. And in fact, if that's you, I want to encourage you as we dismiss to stay in your seat. And we have members of our prayer team who would love to come and just be with you and solidify for you as you solidify before God. I'm in. I want what Jesus is offering. I want that bread. I want that water. So if that's you, I encourage you to stay. And today can be the day when you mark the moment that you receive. I hope you come next week. And I hope that even beyond the weeks of this series, these backyard conversations about the good news continue to happen in all of our lives. Thanks for coming. We'll see you next week.